War of the Worlds. And war is the reason they exist. Incarnation of the Great Warrior. On the East Can coast, several strange constructions protrude from the sea. They look so sinister that it seems appropriate that one of their locations is called Shivering Sands. Huge steel rectangles on raised legs, they resemble gigantic old-fashioned cameras, or illustration of the Martian tripods in H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds. And war is the reason they exist. They were built in 1942 as fortifications against the threat of German invasion. A tour of duty there lasted 6 weeks, and that's the length of time the artist Stephen Turner will spend alone from this Sunday as part of a project exploring isolation. When we met this afternoon, Stephen Turner explained how he'd discovered what is known as the Red Sands Fort Complex.
2001, I think, was the first boat trip I made out there on a Thames sailing barge. It took us about 4 hours to travel the 8 miles. And actually, we sailed right around the base of them, and I took a lot of photographs, and they were just enchantingly beautiful, yet austere and strange things.
And what they are, these extraordinary constructions where you will spend your 6 weeks, they were built in 1942 on the East Kent coast, to the rather wonderfully named Shivering Sands and Red Sands.
Absolutely.
And their observation platforms, anti-aircraft, so they were looking out for bombing runs.
They were built at some cost, actually. I think 1942 prices, they cost $1 million each.
That's a million then, or a million
then? A million then.
A million then, which would now be
so.
Unimaginable.
Unimaginable, yeah. So extraordinary cost, and it's designed to, as you say, disrupt enemy bombing runs on London. Of course, after the first few nights of bombing or days of bombing, the aircraft could actually fly around them. So I'm not quite sure how ultimately effective they were on that basis, but they were used later in the war to try and shoot down V1 flying bombs, that kind of thing. They did actually open fire on a number of our own aircraft, and I think eventually they got an instruction not to open fire unless they had specific instructions from Coastal Command to do it.
And what you will do, you will be entirely alone for 6 weeks, and you will be transcribing tapes, first of all.
I'll be doing some of that, of interviews I've been recording with people about the nature of isolation. I mean, I'm quite interested in the whole concept of creative solitude, creative contemplation, and the difference between solitude and isolation. When is it a good thing and when is it a bad thing? And is it a positive force or a negative one? And there are all kinds of instances where people have been actually incarcerated and even then have found creative opportunities. I was thinking of Walter Raleigh in the Tower for a number of years, wrote a whole history of the world. Thomas More wrote A Dialogue of Comfort Against Tribulation, which apparently is quite a well-known text of Christian wisdom. So things come out of that are positive out of these sort of solitary moments.
Are you good at being alone?
That's a good question, and part of this project is to find out if I am good at being alone, because I'm not entirely sure. I mean, Staffordshire County Council about 3 years ago advertised in The Guardian for a hermit to go live in a cave in a National Trust property, and I think, hundreds of applications they had of people who were really keen for that kind of experience. I wasn't one of them, but I might have been if I'd read about it at the time. So I'm quite interested in the idea of how time passes, what you do with time, how quickly does it pass or how slowly. And what you do with your time when you're alone. And I'm going to create a calendar on a daily basis. If I was in a prison cell, I have visions of, you know, the people scratching 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bar gates on the wall to record the days. But I can actually make things each day, which is another reference back to World War II, because there were a number of suicides on the fort when they were manned during the war. People found it very difficult to cope with the conditions. And so the Ministry of Defence insisted that every man had a pastime or a hobby, and all the kind of creative crafts that these days you find sort of in adult education classes, like egg decorating, applique, needlework. All the men at the fort had to have this sort of creative activity going on. In fact, they weren't allowed on leave until they presented their work on shore and had it passed.
So you haven't been there yet, rather bravely. You've sailed around it, but how physically will you be living?
The actual tower is like a large steel house on 2 floors with a roof, and no one's been there really since the 1960s. I mean, you get the odd visitor who's risks climbing the rusty ladders and goes aboard to take away a souvenir. All the windows are broken, the crittle windows that were made, and all the glass is broken, which will need taping up, and I imagine the rooms will need sweeping out. They'll be like little time capsules, really, which is very interesting to me creatively. But I have got a little self-supporting tent, and if the conditions are so bad, I'll actually just erect a tent and live in the tent. I'm taking a little Calagas stove a couple of burners, a pressure cooker.
People always want to know, it's like the ones going up in the space shuttle, lavatory conditions, what do we think?
A bucket and an open door, I think.
And you've cleverly chosen the summer, relatively, but you'll get lashed, I would imagine, by a bit of sea.
Yeah, I was actually, one of the people I interviewed was a guy called Reg Woodard, who was one of the last people to work for the Ministry of Defence on the forts in 1956, just before they were decommissioned, because post-war there were a kind of care and maintenance crew on board, and he was the assistant cook. And he said his job was to make everyone a mug of tea halfway through the morning, and he could never fill them more than half full because the vibrations from the fort would cause it all to spill over. And a chap called Robin Adcroft, who I've also spoken to, who's also part of Project Red Sands, said that in a way they're like large sound boxes, that you can hear things from miles away because sound travels across the water and up the fort legs, and then it's amplified in the steel box, which is the fort itself. So he said, don't worry if in the middle of the night you hear strange noises.
Great, thank you very much. Well, we hope to talk to you after September 11th.
Well, it'd be great to come back and do that. Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
The artist Stephen Turner, who will be in solitary isolation in the Red Sands complex on the Kent coast from Sunday until September the 11th. Details on seafort.org, and as you heard, we plan to follow the Seafort project here on Front Row on Radio 4. Later in the programme, the strange secrets of America's most famous painting. But first, the newest kind of television picture. Yesterday, a leading mobile phone manufacturer announced plans to launch a television